Kirby isn't a homicide, he's a missing person. I can't tie up the whole force just because some guy decides to walk out on his wife.
Yeah, but this is the fourth time a guy's walked out on his wife in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, what'd you turn up on the other?
Nothing, but
right.
I did
nothing. So they filed under missing persons. Now they turn up, great, fine, I'm delighted.
They have the power to shut the sky. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, weekly, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. Weekly is in W-E-E-K, W-E-E-K, not W-E-A-K. That would be bad. Check it out, everybody. Episode 188, as we hurtle towards Christmas. I'm excited to introduce everyone else who's here. This is Scott Johnson, by the way, and I'm joined now by Brian. You've got your orders, Bosch. Now carry him out, Dunaway.
Bosch. Oh, sweet. Free ground Geiger. What? Yeah, this Geiger counter is free. Just like when you find a burger on the street, ground stuff is always free. Except dog crap. That's not yours. That's for the hobos.
Oh.
They need it to smear all over their bodies for that sweet street tan they have. No, that's not sun exposure. That's dog crap. That's why they smell so bad. John!
Very nice. Also with us, Randy, he has the power to shut the sky, Jordan.
All right. Aloha, Scott. Mm. Aloha, Brian. Mm. Brian. Mm. This week, we're examining an acronym. And before we do, I thought it might be fun to consider some anagrams.
Sugar-teefter. All right, go.
Yeah, so here's what I found. I found Trek Connection is a token in concert. Mm. Morgan Freeman is Neon Farm Gamer. Trope Alert, Pet Realtor. That's right, Pet Realtor. And, of course, FilmSack is MILF Cask, and I'm going to stop there.
Oh, MILF Cask. Fantastic. I knew there was something adrift there. Also with us, and finally, Mr. Brian, did that guy think the word beep was an actual beep, Ibbit?
So I've been hired by my employer to follow you and not let you leak this story. Oh, wait, a payphone? I don't know if I'm authorized to reimburse. Oh, crap. Looks like I'm going to have to eat the cost of this call.
Hey, that's funny. How ironic. You talked about the phone guy when I was also talking about the phone guy. The phone guy was the worst thing ever.
Yes, it was.
I was really sick of that thing by the time he was third time in. Right. But hey, everybody, look, it's Chud. It's Chud, everybody. Here's the problem with Chud. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. Here, I'm going to put the theory out right now before I even play Fletcher. This movie is...
bad.
No, listen. It has a better name and better acronym associated with that name, meaning of the acronym, rather, than the movie behind it. In other words, it has, I believe this movie has cult status
right.
only because of the name. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything else because it's a cheesy B-movie sounding
name.
It's really
fun to say Chud.
Yes.
I want to talk about that concept because I think a lot of cult classics, and I don't mean good movies. I mean the crappy cult classics are cult classics because of their name. I think that if you don't name it Killer Clowns from Outer Space or you don't name it Snakes on a Plane, it doesn't do as well in the minds of the public.
Probably. But you mean like historically, like if you're going to go, like, let's look at Killer Clowns. Killer Clowns is no doubt has some goofy stuff in it. We did. and we had a good time with it and all that stuff's fine. It's just the name suggests that it is epically cult classic-y cheese ball when really it's not. Where on the other hand, Troll 2 is not all that sensationalistic on the face of it. The name is no big deal. In fact, it sounds like a very mundane kind of sequel to something called Troll. Mm-hmm. But beneath it all is this horrible cult classic.
And so I'm saying that if Troll 2 had had a better name, we would have talked about the name. And
yeah,
that's where we're at with Chud.
Yeah, Chud is definitely all name, nothing else. Nothing
else. No cattle.
Nope. All right, let's.
This you got to remember. This movie came out in 1984, the greatest year of movies
ever.
There had to be some dregs to sweep up and put together.
That's true. You couldn't.
But it wasn't because those movies were so good that it made this one look bad.
No. I'm here to tell you. I watched this movie immediately after watching Conan 2011, Conan the Barbarian. And I think I probably liked Chud more than the rest of you because of that.
Because the other one was so bad in your mind.
That associative thing, yeah. Mm.
Well, at the very least, you got to see some cool, modern-day sort of cutting-edge stuff in that Conan thing. In this one, you got none of that. You got all the Home Alone ex-actors, and that's about all you got.
The Wet Bandits?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll get to all that in a minute. Kesha, if only Kesha had been there, all would have been well.
Pesci is who I said.
But did Kesha, you say Joe Pesci? Did you say Pesci?
Pesci.
Well, why not Kesha?
Boy, Kesha would have elevated this film. Wow. That's something you never thought you'd hear me say that, huh?
Joe Kesha, right? You know. Yes. Always going, come here, whatever he said. It was like, come here. It was okay. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's right.
They F you under the manhole cover. They F you under the manhole cover.
And they do, actually.
Who sings It's Friday Night? Is that
Rebecca? No, you're talking Friday Night. That's Katy Perry.
Okay, I always get those two confused. Whatever, they're all the same. They run together. Scott Fletcher, explain more, please.
Chud. Manhattan's homeless population is mutating, and these cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers, aka Chud, are hideous, hungry, and headed for the streets. A photojournalist, his girlfriend, a cop, and a crazy bum try to save the day.
Walked into a bar.
Crazy bum. Can you say crazy bum in 2013?
Crazy bum.
You apparently can't.
Okay.
And I want to stop right there. A photojournalist, his girlfriend, who, what is she doing with him? I don't understand.
What is she doing in the movie?
What is this relation? How does this relationship work?
Well, you know, the model's always like the angry photographers, and that's exactly what this guy is.
But this guy was like randomly angry.
Such a creative type.
He was like, I always like to refer to Scott Johnson whenever we're talking about creative types.
Yeah.
Because Scott embodies like all of that creative stuff without any of these like movie tropes.
Mm.
I don't understand why in movies creative types have to be ridiculously sullen, or they have this manic, depressive, angry side or whatever. I don't understand that.
Well, I can tell you this about that girl. She seemed the one that's supposed to be a model.
Mm-hmm. Mm, right,
I could not get this out of my head. You may remember her from such classics as the original MASH movie and that Back to School Again thing with...
You're thinking of Kellerman.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Oh. She looked just like Sally Kellerman.
Really? No.
I thought she did. I
think Kim Greist is actually really cute.
I don't know about that.
She was in Throw Mama from the Train. She was in... there's nothing else we've seen here, but Brazil. She was in Brazil.
Right. They immediately... turned you off on, I suppose, on purpose. I mean, the first thing you hear her doing is she's popping a pimple on her butt.
Brazil. She was in Brazil.
She was in Brazil. Yeah.
All right. Well, her IMDb photo is horrible.
Short hair, much shorter hair, but
I want to come back to this. I'm sorry, I'm like a Rottweiler with a piece of meat here, Scott. Scott, I know that you have known some artists in your time who were unpredictable.
Yeah.
You know, like who had emotional problems. Sure. But I need you to tell the world. That you've known some artists that were just even keeled, totally cool people.
Of course they were. Of course there are. There's many of them. Most of them, I'll say this, some of the best ones are pretty, have some twisted business going on. But even those who do, typically there are plenty of them who just keep it in their own head. It's fine. They don't have to be, if they've got like, I don't know, whatever it is, let's say they're just a little bit paranoid or they're a little bit whatever. They can keep it in. They don't have. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to cut their ear off.
As tropes go, it seems to me like, for instance, the trope of the angry cop makes a lot more sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have a job that should impart a lot of high emotion on a person, right?
You're talking about Bosch
or whatever.
Bosch.
Yeah, but everybody is referred to by their last name in this movie. John knows that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a nice little trope in itself, where you're a bunch of serious men about serious business. And everyone's last name. It's Wilson. It's Bosch. Mm-hmm. Right. It's Jensen.
Damn it!
It's never, no one has a first name in Chud World.
Right.
Yeah. I like that, though.
Bosch, your mouth's writing checks that your body can't cash.
And Bosch, by the way, by the end of this thing, and people, if you're watching the movie, you got to agree with me at least a little bit. He, as far as I'm concerned, he is the only reason to watch this movie. Because he is a bad, bad, bad actor. He is not good at this. I don't know why. You know what? Look, good on him for getting in there. he got to be around for like one of John Goodman's first screen appearances.
Right? That was awesome. Right.
He was, you know, he was there at the beginning, and it's great. Whatever. You got a movie role. You did what you had to do, and I'm proud of you. And I know I've seen him somewhere before, but
we
have.
We've seen him as Rico's father in Starship Troopers.
Oh, my gosh. That's him.
Is that right? There you go.
Christopher Curry hasn't done much, but he did that.
Wow.
He was also in Home Alone 3, which is, you know, another Again. Home Alone connection for
this
thing.
Yeah,
this
Home Alone connections are really weird. Yeah.
How crazy is it that the most uplifting thing you can say about Chud is that it has John Goodman's early screen right. attempt? Like,
right.
Right. Well, it was Goodman, and then the other guy you saw, he was with him, the other cop. He's in a million things. I couldn't place his name to save my life. I'm sure I could find it, but that looked like an early deal for him. The homeless dude who had the leg bitten looked just Kevin Kline, but it wasn't. It was somebody else. Yeah.
And then one of the councilmen or whatever, he looked like a fat who's Rhea Perlman's
J. Thomas,
husband on Cheers. What was it?
Nick Tortelli.
Nick Tortelli, like a fat Nick Tortelli.
Well, and here's your kind of weird coincidence. So the other cop in the diner was the other Carla husband,
really?
the hockey player. That was
I forgot about that. Yeah.
It was Eddie LeBeck.
I just figured out where I'd seen Bosch before. More recently, it was an episode of The West Wing. That's what it was.
Oh my gosh!
Of course it was.
Yeah, he's also been in Voyager before, but Scott. And we'll get to that later. But he's it's funny because I feel like this is really, really bad. Like this is really bad. Like he is bad in this. If I would have shown this to people, or this is on my resume, I'd have gone running and screaming the other way if I were people trying to hire him. But he's done okay for himself. He's got a huge, like, litany of things he's been in. He's in stuff this year. He was on Glee, played a guy named Gunther.
I think one of the many things we've proved with Film Sack is that you can't kill a career by having a bad appearance, and you definitely can't make a career by having a good one. But we tend to see bad ones more than good ones.
Right.
And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing how often we have gone and seen a film where we're like, wow, I didn't even know this person was working in Hollywood this early.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there he is. There's Sean Connery and Zardoz. Not at all. Maybe a hiccup. Maybe a speed bump in a good career.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. I mean, one does not simply walk into Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Mm-hmm. You have to at least have some kind of career for this guy, for Bosch, to even get into that piece of poo. He's the reason to watch it, in my opinion, because it's more fun to watch him be bad than it is to watch the movie try to take itself seriously.
Yeah. Right? The actors, right. It's definitely more of a movie you watch for the actors. You watch for what's his face? Wonder Years narrator, Daniel Stern, in an early appearance, and Kim Greist and John Hurt. Yeah. And
yeah. What but about speaking
Daniel
speaking
Stern's
of,
hair as well, by the way.
Right. Well, that was kind of his breaking away hair. So I was ready for that.
That was rough. Anyway,
speaking of the film taking itself seriously, I spent a lot of time wishing that it would not. I found a lot of like, oh wow, this could have been fun.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, yeah.
Did you ever
as a parody? Oh God. Yeah. It'd been great.
Yep.
Like did you even get to the end of the film and think, oh wow, they never winked at the, audience.
Not
like
once.
They never, I really thought even near the end, it would go off the rails and then I would be, yeah, it's actually the big twist. Sorry, folks.
Even with a boardroom with like five character actors that you've all seen before, be the butt of some parody movie in some other movie. Every one of those stodgy actors, Wilson, whoever the other guys were, they've all been in 100 of those movies.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even do it here. Just straight faced. I'm the city, or I'm, you know, we've got to get our gas lines. Like just a cartoon. If they would have embraced that and gone all the way parody or any parody, I would have laughed.
But like the twist in this movie, which, again, sorry, folks, if you haven't seen it, but the twist is that...
No, I'm glad you haven't seen it. Congratulations.
The twist is that the menace under the streets, we made it. That's the twist, of course.
Yeah.
You could see that coming a mile away. But if something like Tromaville Gross had come shambling out of the sewers at that point, it would have been so fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. These were much more like, we're never going to show it, and it's kind of like Sleestaks, but maybe...
They were totally Sleestaks. There's a reason those guys were always in the dark.
Right.
Not good. The monster makeup was bad. although there's some of our Star Trek connections right there, but it's just not, and you don't see those things till when? It's like, you got 10 minutes left, let's show the monsters now.
Right. When they had their rap session down in the sewers one time, that, you know, one of the wet bandits was down there looking at them, but that's about it.
I'd just like to point out that I just claimed this movie would have been made better if they'd gone and asked Lloyd Kaufman for help.
Yeah, that's remember just, that.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not a small thing you said. I think we may have skipped over that a little too quickly. If he would have done that, it would have been a better movie. Let that sink in, everybody. Just a second. CHUD is an acronym for Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers, but it also means Contamination Hazard Urban Disposal, as you can barely see on the crates that are full of toxic materials in that scene. So they get it from both.
The weakest twist ever, because it doesn't actually lead you anywhere. That you don't end up with a, oh, so then right. All we've got to do is whatever. That doesn't happen at all. It's like a twist where you're left wondering if they actually have finished twisting it. Like, right? Like you, the rest of the movie, you're like, okay, so where's it really going?
Yeah.
We're done here? No?
All right.
Lori Matos, and some other fun trivia for you, or Matos, I don't know how to say her name. She's the movie's first on-screen victim that walks around with her dog near the manhole.
Right. I thought she was a streetwalker type. Then I was like, wait,
she got a dog. They don't carry
she's
dogs.
She's walking a dog.
She's way too conservatively dressed as well. But she's the real-life wife of co-star Daniel Stern.
Right.
Oh. Honey, you should get a
Mrs.
haircut.
Mrs. Stern.
Yeah, Mrs. Stern, who had far way better control of her hair.
Would that make her Winnie Cooper?
Oh, look at you. That's pretty good. Feature films, a total of three actors who would later go on to play roles in the Home Alone series. And that was Daniel Stern. That was Kevin's dad. I forgot his actual name. It's right here somewhere. John Hurd.
Angry photographer.
Okay, so here, back to that for a second. There were about three or four stories all happening at once. Mm-hmm. And it felt anthology-like in a couple of ways, because Stern knows photographer, but he is also hanging out with Bosch. But really, you have the Bosch story, you have photographer story, and you have
actress story.
Actress story. Oh, I forgot about her.
And for a good long while, they don't intersect much.
It's like Love Actually without any of the good
totally
parts.
Yeah.
You know, where they all kind of know
they
each other.
They should call this Crash Chud.
Or Bad Pulp Fiction or something.
Yeah. Chud Actually.
And I didn't know which. I didn't know which of the side stories I was less interested in. Like that's kind of the problem I had. And I still really don't know. If I had to put my finger on it, I think I followed the Bosch thing closer, because that's where all things intersected. But also, he was just fun to watch be fake mad and, you know, B-level acty and all that. That was great.
Right.
But I feel like you missed the movie missed. If the point of the movie was scary stuff living underground that's going to kill us, you lost it. It got absorbed by the attempts to tell four very mediocre, dumb stories.
Yeah, and you kind of have to go with where the movie takes you, right? If you can't just say, oh, well, this movie was actually about all these things that they didn't show. No, it was about what it was about, which is not much.
Yeah.
There's really not much here.
You know, since you've broken it down like that, Scott, I didn't think about that during the movie, but the one part that interested me the most was probably the model story, because she seemed to be seeing a lot of weird crap that I think that probably could have been better played out, maybe extending that story a little bit. I mean, all the way from busting the artery in the sewage line that she did when she was in the shower.
Was that what that was?
I don't know what the crap she busted.
Must have been.
It was supposed to be blood everywhere. I thought. Or
yeah, that was blood. Right. It was the reverse psycho. Instead of the blood swirling down the drain, it was
coming up. And she just took it. She seemed fine. And later later she's sitting in their apartment going do-do-do like nothing happened.
I would have totally freaked out, man. Yeah.
I didn't. Hers was the least interesting of the stories. Really? I just didn't understand the John Hurd thing. Like, who? What was his original deal? He's hanging out with the homeless to get the story or whatever. Okay, right. But then he's mad at her. I don't know really know why. I guess she's naked in some ad for something, for perfume or whatever it was.
Yeah,
and then,
because it offends his artistic sensibilities, basically.
Great.
I don't know. I just felt like it made him mad because he's a mad person who gets mad.
Yeah. I'm mad.
His job seemed to be mad. He did look real young, though. He looked like 15. Not nearly the older face I remember from things like
Alone.
No, what was the one with Tom Hanks where he was the competing toy?
Oh,
yeah,
Big. Yeah, right. He was
the boyfriend slash competition.
I'll just come up with a coloring book and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's his job, is to be like that. That's his job in all movies, even in Home Alone. He's like, you guys were late. What's going on? We left Kevin.
Right. He's constantly annoyed. That's his character. Right.
I'm annoyed.
He was so young, though. My gosh, he just looked tiny. Him and Daniel Stern. If you look at Daniel Stern these days, I mean, you know, people age, whatever, that's not how you see either of these two dudes.
Right. It was fun watching Daniel Stern explore a type of acting that he just totally abandoned.
Like, how do you mean? Explain what you mean.
Well, I mean, he seemed to be a character in this that I've never seen him do in anything else. Usually he plays, you know, kind of the goofball. And it wasn't really the goofball. He was almost a little bit serious here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think those were serious attempts to
be serious.
Act. Yeah, like, he's doing a voice, kind of like an accent that's supposed to be kind of like John Goodman tried to do in the restaurant. They're all very Bostonian. Mm-hmm. Was this supposed to be Boston, by the way?
Boy, I couldn't figure it out.
They said Soho a couple of times with the gas lines, and that's in New York. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So is it New York or is it – because they seemed confused.
It was filmed in New York.
Right. But they seemed confused as to the setting, and no one ever actually said other than that Soho reference.
I figure it was kind of like a Gotham kind of thing, you know?
It was like a fake comic book town.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it felt to me.
Right. Last night in the city.
Of Soho.
It just – yeah. But this film is also one that's really, really stuck in time because so many things happen where somebody sees something and nobody else does. But you got to realize that's probably happening to people all over town. Mm. And the minute that you advance from 1984 forward, like, what do we do when we feel a little earthquake? We go to Twitter, right?
Like,
this whole thing would have been solved by crowdsourcing instantly.
Yeah, like a single tweet.
Yeah.
Right.
One trending tweet would have done it, taking care of the whole thing.
Their technology they were really focusing on was voice machines and answer machines. Right. I mean, like, just every 5 minutes it was an answer machine technology.
Some kind of tape. If it wasn't a Geiger counter, it was some sort of tape. Right. That's totally true.
Tape was really exciting, apparently, 30 years ago.
Yeah, people were into it,
man.
84, dude. That's when that was at its height, right? That was when things were really taking off for tape. At least that's when I was going to Raspberry Records and buying things on tape.
Right.
Like 1984 by Van Halen. I would buy that on a tape, carry that around junior high with me. Listen to this. Forgot a fifth storyline guy. Nosy reporter type.
Yeah.
Who comes around with his hippie hair going, when are you going to give me the scoop, huh?
Yes, right.
Yeah. And so then
I'm following you.
Throw me a bone, huh?
It's like, all right, I'll throw you a bone. And then, you know, nothing. See? Nothing. See what I just did there?
Yeah. Gave him nothing.
And you don't. And it's 1984, so you don't have a Twitter feed where you can go tell the world what a jackass I am.
Yeah, but what was his point? He didn't push anything along. The story didn't further because of him. Every time he showed up, I went, you just affected nothing.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be that added pressure to exposure. Yeah.
It's like somebody's brother-in-law on the set, may as well put him to use, is how that all felt to me. I didn't get it. Also, very little happens in Chud. For a very long time. If you're coming to this episode looking for praise for Chud, your childhood favorite movie,
right.
You're not going to get it.
I don't think
you're curious to see if we get any emails. I can't believe you ripped on Chud.
Well, I also don't think, if that's the case, I don't think you watched the movie. Go watch the movie. Right. Seriously. It's bad, and it just there's never anything redeeming in this movie.
Or go along happily, you know, not knowing that the Chud, which is a great name and a great idea and a very campy, cool idea, is not very good. So just never expose yourself to how bad it is. And then just go on thinking it was a cult classic.
How much does this overlap with the television show Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, does it at all, though?
In time.
But time is a 84. Few years. It's a few years before, right? Because Beauty and the Beast didn't come out until 86.
Late 80s. Yeah.
Was it
88?
86, 88. Beauty and the Beast.
I thought about that quite a bit. I thought about how there was this
sewer.
Yeah, people? underground menace thing in a city.
Beauty and the Beast was 87, by the way.
Right. Yeah, during the 80s, we went through this whole sewer people. I mean, those Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, X-Men had the whole underground people. I mean, we really explored the city of underground during that time.
Yeah, that's a funny thing to bring up. Why do you suppose, what was that interest? What do you think it is in our psyche?
Got us so fascinated with the sewers?
Yeah, because remember there was Alligator. TV movie. There was all these things about flushing stuff down the toilet that would come back to kill you later.
Yeah. Well, when you live in a city, you know, I guess when you're in New York, for example, and you're, you know, going about your day after day, you realize that there's this whole underground area that you're not allowed to go into, and anything could be going on down there.
Yeah. Anything. They could be having sex down there for all we know.
There could be Kevin Kline lookalikes.
Nasty booty
and
sex.
in really large cities like New York City, when time passes, things get built over other things and they get lost. And then, you know, so you have
You've
people discovering.
It's true.
Like it's the linoleum of cities. Mm-hmm. You're like, it's easier to cover over than pull it out. So they do.
That didn't sound right.
It didn't sound right, did it?
But it's a fascinating thing to think that there was a time, and basically I think we saw it in entertainment in the 80s, when people in real life were starting to wonder, what's going on down there? There's lots of spaces for things to be happening.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it in a movie like this. And what's sad to me is that simple question, what's going on down there? Let's see it. Let's get scared by it. That question is really never addressed by this movie.
No, nothing to be scared of, really.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fascination because nobody knew. But we now live in a time where Mike Rowe's been down there a dozen of times and shown us.
This week on Dirty Jobs.
He's shown us exactly what's down there. There's rats and there's rat shit and there's dead things. And, you know, now we're like, oh, okay, well, I just don't want to go down there, but I'm not really scared of it anymore. I when he went off the side of that subway and then kept going deeper and the guy that was trailing him gave up because it's too stinky or whatever.
Forget it.
That does give me the willies, but not in a kind of scaredy way, but more of a like a, I don't want to know what people, I don't know what, I don't want to know what stage people are in their lives where this is an acceptable way to live.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where they've gotten to the point where it's like, yep, this cave within three walls, 20 tunnels.
This will be my home.
Yeah. And I look like Kevin Kline and my leg is bitten off. Like that's a bad, bad time for everybody.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Scott just sort of started a much better story.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh, I did. Yeah,
just
I did.
Gave us the beginnings of something that I'd really like to see fleshed out.
Yeah.
So to speak.
I would. I would watch a movie. Okay, look. The idea, make this movie today. Redo Chud.
Right.
Way better movie.
First of all, don't.
No,
don't.
Totally. I'm not saying you should, and you shouldn't call it Chud. But imagine a movie. Okay, I'll give you an example of a movie.
You absolutely keep it called Chud because that's about the only thing that'll pull people in.
That's true. That's true. Right. But think about it. We've seen another movie on the show that was better than Chud that was basically Chud, and it was Mimic. It's the same idea. The bug goes down into the sewer and becomes a giant killer bug. And now under the streets of New York, which are huge and vast and labyrinth-like, there are a billion of these giant bugs.
And he can get around and anywhere he wants. And
And I enjoyed the hell out of that movie because they got that part of it right. You know, Del Toro said, look, it's supposed to be violent and horrible and these things are going to, you know, come and... And the guy that played Rock from Rock on Fox is going to lose his leg. And like, it's going to be great. And that was a lot of fun. I remember maybe liking that movie more than you guys did. But you know, again, you could make a movie like this today, have it still be scary and jumpy. We're certainly not sick of zombies yet right now. So
apparently not.
You could do this and make it work. I just don't know why they spent so much time talking in four or five different storylines that never paid off, except maybe Bosch. His sort of paid off because at the end, Wilson went down in a fiery truck who apparently all you have to do is just barely go into a manhole and you'll explode. Why was that? Was it because all the gas was released? What I'm talking about?
Didn't you watch Christmas Vacation?
Well,
if your shitter's full and you go outside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. Shitter's full.
That's
right.
Going to happen.
Oh, we're watching that tonight. I'm excited.
Yep. Oh, and it glows. So Randy Quaid is dumping radioactive waste. It's not just poop.
Yep.
Right.
Totally right. So why did he know the old lady that he got out of jail and then followed down to the pits? Can someone
some sort of photo thing with her, not an article or something on her, right?
So they established that at some point. Did I miss that? Okay.
Everybody was connected between, like, once again, that crash kind of thing. It's just he knew the soup kitchen guy and they did an interview with he was supposed to be, that's what Derek was calling about. He kept calling. Mm-hmm. What is his name? Derek?
Derek, wait. Was his name Derek? He kept calling?
The phone guy.
When John Hurd said hi, he reached John Hurd's voicemail, beep. And the guy talked as if it was a real beep.
Oh, right.
Right,
the hell was that about?
Yeah, I don't know.
That was the other story. That was the chicken again, the bucket story.
Again, it really was. Yeah. Right.
Again, though, 1984 audiences knew so little about answering machines that you could really just did. You could just gaslight everybody watching this movie and say, "No, this is how they work. This is how they work."
Really? Like, wasn't that the heyday of the answering machine, or is that no. earlier than that? Really?
Yeah. Do you guys remember somebody
yeah,
would
I
always
guess so. Yeah.
You guys remember when you used to, when somebody it would go around, like stories where they would say, oh, you got to call so-and-so's answering machine because it's got a hilarious message on it. Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever do that? Call local yeah. numbers with hilarious messages yeah. oh, that you yeah. could leave?
I only yeah. remember doing, so tell me if you guys, this is some fun nostalgia here. I remember me and my friends, very young, we would call these strange numbers. I don't even remember how we got them, but they were these right. weird long numbers. They may have even been... you know, charging us for long distance back in those days.
Still.
But they would be
parents
like,
are like
they'd be like weird German or Russian like voices on the other end and sounds yeah, like yeah. boom, boom, boom. Man. And we thought we were talking to space, man. We thought we were talking to like another planet.
What was that? And they used to sell answer machine tapes with different clever ways mm-hmm. of answering the yeah. machine and stuff with little jingles and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Remember those days? Uh-huh. Those are good days. Those are good times. No, they weren't. They were terrible. Let's all forget it ever happened. It's an awful time.
But boy, this movie dabbles in that quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when we got our first non-corded phone at the house. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those big, dumb 80s white ones with a giant antenna on it. And it always was dead batteries. And it was always in the room we didn't think it was in. It was NiCad. So my mom would only charge it a little and then forget. Oh, and then the battery right. only thought it had
giant
5 minutes.
Ginormous antenna.
Yeah. Those are good times, man.
Mm-hmm. And that was. I'd found a great. Scott will play any actual audio during the cast. But. I got a commercial from Answer Machine Tones back for TV Party from the 80s.
Oh, no yeah. way, dude. No way.
Hold on a second. I'm pasting that.
Send that in. Put that in there. We'll play a little bit. Is it a YouTube thing?
Yes, YouTube thing.
Okay, hold on. We're going to run this real quick.
I remember calling party lines.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one.
Oh, yeah.
Here's right. one. Let's play that. See what this one says. Hopefully the volume's good on this.
53 seconds of fun.
All right.
Hey, how are you? Sorry that I'm not at home.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm
having terrible memories.
Crazy
Damn
calls,
it, Derek.
A sync of 7 different songs and funny recordings for answering machines.
I am very sorry that I'm not at home to take your call.
On the 1495.
And I will get right back to you.
Leave your message. Give someone the gift of gab for their answering machine.
And a friend. What you've actually done is bought a one-way ticket to the answering machine. So.
Oh, good Lord, dude.
Want to make sure that your friends never call you again?
Right? And they wanted $14.95. So, like, knock 25 years of inflation off, and that's like a car payment.
Right? Right. 8.5.
That's like nine.
Not George isn't home.
That's like 19 gallons of gasoline.
I'm going to call the 1-800 number, and we're going to see what it is now.
Oh, man. Yeah, the 800 number.
We just lost Randy.
We did? Nope. No, he's here. He's
to
here.
Ensure proper handling, oh, okay. This call may be recorded. Please stand a line to continue. Okay. You have reached a national telemarketing company. The number you dialed is...
8 I don't need 0, to be told. I put it in.
8
5 4
Oh, good Lord.
5 5 0
I don't like
0.
Her. I don't
Again,
like her.
The number you have reached is...
So
what?
Zero, zero, eight, five,
why are they doing
four,
that?
Five,
okay.
Zero, zero.
Okay.
If you believe you've dialed the correct number, please press 1 and I'll transfer you to an agent.
What?
Yes.
Okay. Press 1. How do I do it?
We're in Skype.
Hold on. Okay,
put
1. Here we go.
Sorry, I didn't get that. Okay. I'll transfer you now.
All right, here we go.
To ensure proper handling, this call may be recorded. Please stay on the line to continue. Thank you for calling. To ensure proper handling, this call may be recorded. Please stay on the line to continue.
We heard that. She said that twice.
That was so much talk.
It's too much. All right, let's see where this goes. Sorry, you missed me. I'm not on the phone. It's a little bit.
That's exactly what needs to happen.
That'd be one of those things. I have a feeling this is going to ring into a... Oh.
This is Ed. How may I help you?
Oh, shite! All right, we're hanging up on Ed. See ya.
Oh.
You're supposed to order crazy calls.
I should have. Maybe we'll call that on TMS tomorrow.
You just woke that poor guy up.
Oh, this is Ed. What's going on? Oh, sorry. The sex line. Hey, this is Ed.
Oh, my God. I finally got a call. I'm finally going to make a sale and finally going to be able to buy some food.
I'm supposed to ask him if he sells custom answering machines.
I should have. I was too nervous. When Ed answered, I didn't know what to do. So I hung up.
The worst prank caller ever, Scott.
It may not have been a guy. I don't know if you guys have heard the ongoing controversy about how a lot of these telemarketers are going to AI.
Oh, they're robot men, really?
Yeah, that's really, really impressive. It uses, you know, like Siri technology to quickly figure out what you're asking and look up the answer and give it to you in a natural voice.
Well, the world's most soul-deadening job I ever had in my life was my brief 2 weeks at a telemarketing thing during high school, and I've never hated anything since as much.
Yeah.
So make robots do it. That's cool. I have no problem with that. Okay. Well, what else? So, geez.
I believe you said leather kumquat. Is that correct?
leather
kumquat. Brilliant. That's
the hot holiday gift.
Yeah, and my new band name. So look at this here. My favorite little scene in the whole movie. I'd like to hear everyone's favorite scene, since you really have to pick and choose with this thing. It's so hard to find. But what I uncovered as my favorite was when she was done showering. She'd been sprayed by sewer blood and then back to not thinking too much about it, sitting around the house with no music or anything to distract her. And then suddenly the door's banging. Mm-hmm. And she runs to she goes into the other room, sees the creature, runs back into the same room she just came from, slams the door, locks it, goes to get the phone, picks it up. Somehow a chud has come and snipped the phone wires while she wasn't looking. I don't know when that happened. There was no chud in there. But she looks at the wires. Now, that's all fine and dandy, but here's the best part. She picks up the backside of the phone, picks up the two raw wires that are hanging out, and proceeds to jam the wires into the backside of the phone to no avail for about 4 or 5 tries.
She was quite the MacGyver when it came to technology. Like the first one of the first things you see, she's complaining about some stuff that John and her left in the basement of hers. She goes down there and flicks the switch. You know, it's one of those where you flick the switch, oh, the light doesn't come on. Let me flick it 34 more times.
Right. Click, 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 click. And then some dickhead apparently had done the thing that we all hate, which is when you have a light switch and a switch actually on the bulb itself, and someone had actually turned it off at the bulb, so your light switch is useless.
That was pretty good.
Hate that crap.
That was pretty good. Anybody else have a scene that made them kind of like it? The scene
I liked the guy who was tailing it wasn't John Hurt, it was the other, it was the news guy.
Right.
And the guy puts money in the payphone, and he flicks the thing to hang up the phone, and then gets the money out, the dime out, and then puts it in his mouth and swallows it.
Yeah, totally.
Oh darn, that was the only dime.
Also, gross. How gross is that?
Yes, exactly.
Public payphone, a dime, any money. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that particular MythBusters, but testing money for like bacteria and stuff. It is rough. Like all that money in your wallet. You don't know how many strippers' coin slots that thing has been in.
Right. Yeah. of course, you know, Mythbusters is meant to be entertaining, right? Yeah. So you know very well that they only go with the most disgusting, the most outrageous results they get, right?
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, I took that class in college where we all went around with swabs and swabbed all sorts of things and then came back and swabbed them through agar and Petri dishes and watched what grew. And tried to figure out what grew.
Yeah, yeah.
And money is just fine. You go to a cash register in a 7-Eleven and run that swab around in that money drawer, and you get stuff.
You get new life. Yeah, you get new sprouting life.
Species that have never been.
Yeah, those are the real sea monkeys right there.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, Brian Ibbett, you're the one that informed me not long ago, maybe a month ago, that sea monkeys are real.
They're brine shrimp.
I thought they were. All big fakery, like it was magic sand or something.
They don't look like, you know, they're all floating around with corns and scepters and, you know.
Right?
Well, I know that. Yeah, I never saw one with a king's hat.
They're brine shrimp. They're freeze-dried or something, and all it takes is some water, and they reconstitute.
And they live again.
I love it that Scott just said king's hat instead of crown.
Yeah, crown. I love that.
He called it a king's hat.
The king's hat.
That is so. It's like that Jack in the Box commercial, where that young woman refers to Jack's clock bracelet.
Yeah,
your clock bracelet you're wearing right there.
Right. That's pretty good. Yeah, I couldn't, for whatever reason, the word crown was not coming out.
The only scene that made me just laugh, and I don't think it was intentional at all, I think it was just a misinterpretation of what they got from the actress as opposed to what was actually in the script. The little girl, the daughter, I'm sorry, the granddaughter of the guy who got ate in the telephone booth.
Yeah, yeah.
She went to, of course, she was at the police station, and Officer Bill, the guy from, the friend from, Christmas Vacation.
Oh yeah,
the coworker. But you know, mm-hmm. he's been in other stuff
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was in there, and he was like, "Yeah, I can't get anything from her. She's hysterical."
Yeah,
and she's like, she's got her head down the table. She hasn't mm-hmm. said a word.
No, you remember when she was in the thing itself. She just her grandpa just got snatched yeah. and eaten by a slea stack with glowy eyes, and she just stood there.
She just stood there, so she was not hysterical at all. But apparently, no. from the page. Of what was supposed to be read and how right. this actress ended up going, whatever route they went to, just totally didn't match up. Yeah. And
there needs to be a trope. Like, you shouldn't have stuck to the script.
Yeah.
Right. You should have adjusted.
Yeah. This movie is full of stuff where, why didn't they improvise? It would have been better.
Here's a good example. My second favorite scene in the whole movie. They're down in the pits there. You got your John Hurt and your Daniel Stern, and they're just, I don't know what they're doing, but they're running around constantly. And right. at some point, they come in through a hole. And there are a bunch of bodies in there. One's in half, another one's heads off. You know, there's a lot of carnage. And they trip on each other and roll on top of bodies.
Slip around on squishy, yes.
That was right. great, dude. That was great. But it reminded me of what you just said. Like, that's a scene on paper that you could have done so much other things with. Like, just improvise or just get there on set and go, ugh, you know what? That's not going to work, guys. Let's try this instead. You know, I don't know. This director, we haven't talked about him, but he's kind of a weird one. So his name is Douglas Cheek. It's a strange last name, isn't it? when they asked if he wanted to do the sequel, he's turned the other cheek. Anyway, he says, as an editor and director known for Outfox, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, Chud, and Walmart, the high cost of low prices.
Oh, wow.
So that tells you a little something.
So he did Chud, and then he's the low-rent Michael Moore, is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah. 2004, yeah, 2005, he did a couple of things. That Walmart one, I think I even saw that, but I don't remember much about it.
I didn't realize I've seen both of them. Yeah. You know, I didn't realize I've seen anything else this guy's done, but he's low rent, Michael.
And those are just editing jobs. In director's chair, he's done three things: Empires, Peter and Paul, and The Christian Revolution, which is a TV documentary in 2003. Chud, and then before that, Vegetable Soup. He did an episode of that show. It used to be on TV. It was some show.
That's a show.
Yeah. Okay. So, what my point of all that is: this isn't even a guy who was like, "Oh, he wet his whistle on some old movies, and now look where he is today." He's doing nothing today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of any note, really.
And the screenwriter, Shepard Abbott, did nothing else.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing else.
Oh, they've done
enough. He changed his name.
That's possible.
They've done enough. That's, he did Chud. What else, in Hollywood. What else do you want? Yeah, if you got Chud, you got it all.
wait a minute. Hold on. Title of the episode.
You've done Chud, you've done it all.
Yeah, remember when we used to try to come up with the episode titles? There you go, right there.
I do have to congratulate IMDb for doing a thing which I think they're good at, which is saying if you liked this, then you'll like these other things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And other things like Scanners, The Blob, The Brood, these are pretty good.
What's funny is you look at these six, well, all except for the first one, which is From Beyond, which we have seen. These other five, amazingly, we haven't. Like, I'm surprised we haven't seen Scanners. I guess it probably just hasn't come up on streaming, but... Yeah. That's like Michael Ironside breakout film.
That's a must. We got
heads exploding.
I actually don't want to give Netflix credit for that, because whenever you're looking at recommendations, you're just looking at technology that pays attention to what other people are doing, what other viewers, subscribers are doing.
Yeah.
When they watch this, they watch that.
Yeah.
When they give more than 2 stars to this, they give more than 2 stars to that.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And I actually sometimes I'm scratching my head like, who are these other Netflix subscribers that think that, you know, like they watch Chud and Killer Clowns from Outer Space and Orange is the New Black, like that?
Right. How does that? Right.
How do we get from here to there?
Right.
It's a long road from there to here. What else? Let's see. That's all I had. Well, you guys have anything else of note here for Chud before we do clips?
I wanted to talk go ahead. No,
I was going
to
say, just the fact that it took 34 minutes before you even see one of the Chud's hands.
Oh, thank you for
talking about the long con.
Yeah, thank you for tracking that, because I was wondering how long it had been.
It was a while.
I'm getting so deep into it. I'm like, we're still taking photos of some lady. Right. What are we doing here?
Not seen a chud.
Yeah.
No chud. Jumping a chud site.
Where's all my chuds?
Yeah. I agree with that. Randy, what were you going to say?
The trope of the overreaction as a solution.
I like
that. We're gonna gas the whole freaking world to fix this problem. Right. You know what I mean? Like, and even one of the characters is like, wait a minute. I just want to make sure I got this right. You're talking about sealing off all the sewers and then just turning the gas into the sewers? Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, this is your solution? You're going to blow up the whole city.
Well, it was married to another trope, which is corporate. You know, corporate America or corporate whatever, the corporate machine does not care about human lives. Progress at the cost of everything else. You know, yeah. Wilson, the epitome of that. And then he's got that combined with, I'm just going to gas the whole city. You can't do the whole city. Oh, I'm just going to do a section in Soho.
Right.
As if those people don't matter.
And he actually says it'll just be for a little while.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, like, you actually think this is going to kill off the chuds of not everybody else because of a little while.
And the city was sure complicit, dude. Like,
oh yeah.
Nobody, there's no authority there. And every time everybody say, oh, these are secret government documents, I'm like, yeah, but there's no government anybody in here. Nobody's overseeing this. Nobody's got any kind of, you know, whatever. You're just freewheeling it. And the chief of all police is sitting around going, calm down, Bosch. Take it easy, Bosch. It's like, no, dude, the guy's about to gas everybody and you're just going to sit and let it happen. That was all so self-serious and completely unbelievable. All of that stuff. I hated it. Mm-hmm. That's all I hated it.
I agree with Randy. Would have been better as a comedy. Yeah. The whole everything we've outlined here pretty much cements that.
Some tongue in cheek. And again, like, I hate to keep referencing Lloyd Kaufman, but he gets that when you do something, when you say something crazy like, well, let's just gas the whole city to kill off the chuds, you followed up with some guy sneering and squeezing his hands going, yeah, let's gas the whole city.
Yeah.
You know, like that, because you, it's fun. It's funny. It's not so damn serious and stupid.
Yeah, who would have known a movie called Chud would take it so seriously? That's where the disconnect is for me.
Yeah, it really is.
It's like having your movie called Mutant Stranglers from Outer Space and have it feel like a procedural police drama. Mm-hmm. What, right. What are you doing? That's a good point.
It's like the word Chud is for 25 years ago, like the word derp would be nowadays.
Right.
Yeah. Or if your movie's called Snakes on a Plane and it just referred to sneaky guys, like guys that used to be spies that have turned on the government and they're just called snakes. So it's this kind of existential name for the movie, Snakes on a Plane. No, you want effing snakes on the plane.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like big snakes. And you want Samuel L. Mother F&T Jackson saying stuff that's funny. And I'm not saying that movie's any good, but I'm just, you know, at least they knew what they were doing.
I actually like Snakes on a Plane because of the fact that it's self-aware.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
I know. I didn't buy into that whole internet hype and machine, and I didn't go. So I should probably see it now.
And the thing is, the movie really didn't live and die on internet hype, you know?
It tried to, though. It
like
did.
The movie, it's actually a movie. Like, it actually has some crazy little things that you haven't seen in other movies, and it actually has an ending. That was the thing that I always thought Snakes on a Plane was going to not provide,
not have an ending, but it did.
Yeah, it actually does. So
did it involve a briefcase with a light coming out of it? They never explain, or how did it go? No,
nope.
Did it involve his arm hanging on a fence?
I'm not going to tell you because I like the end of Snakes on a Plane, and I would like you to watch it and see what you think.
Does it end with him complaining about all this hacker shit from Newman? Did that happen? No.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. No.
No.
All right. I'm just gonna keep mentioning every single
every
reference.
Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
I love those movies. All right. Moving on then. Let's get to some clips. Clips, everybody. It's where we captured stuff from the movie, and we got some good ones here. Hold on. I have a funny search happening earlier. All right. Here we go. I don't even remember what this is.
All right, Derek.
Oh, I just like the way he said that.
All right, Derek.
That's Derek on the phone.
That's when he was just talking to himself.
Yeah, when he was acting like he was replying, but he wasn't really.
Right, yes.
Derek
was on the answering machine talking to him, and he was responding back even though Derek couldn't hear him.
What do you think the word bum, like referring to a homeless or hobo person as a bum, is a thing that is no longer with us? That feels like my dad's generation said bum.
Yeah, right. That ended with bum fights.
Yeah.
Yeah, bum!
It probably did. But I remember my dad would always say, what are you, some kind of bum on the street? Or you don't want to be a bum on the street, do you? Get better grades or whatever. And
right.
You don't hear that anymore now. And I don't even think it's like falling out of favor because it's all PC now. I don't think that's it. I think it's just an old way of saying a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
right.
hobo.
Yeah.
You don't hear hobo anymore either.
No, or if you do, hobo's in such ironic usage now.
Right, yes.
You
know?
Like,
yes.
Hobos are magic. Homeless people are sad. And
kind of any word that is used to describe people derisively, it has to go through evolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you don't... I imagine the word hippie actually had a time when it was meaningful.
Mm. You know? That's a really good point. Yeah.
I'm sure they loved it when it was... Well, we know they did. All you got to do is watch some old 60s documentary or something. And that was their term of endearment, and it was a hateful term for anybody who wasn't a hippie. Now it's like, oh, you have long hair, and you kind of are a loaf and eat a lot of granola, you're some kind of damn hippie. So we use it in this ironic way now, which I kind of like. I think bum needs to make a return. That's all I'm getting at.
All right, you bum.
Yeah, come on back. Yeah, you bum. All right, here you go. Info about bums.
I don't know, Derek. What do bums do on their day off? That's funny. Did you make that up?
Yeah, that's funny. We're not going to hear the joke, but that's funny.
That's funny. Did you bring that up?
Yeah. Talking to Derek on the phone. All right. Here's how the music is in this whole movie. Here's just a taste of it. Kind of like that part.
Boy, you're right. The whole movie.
There's the worst one, though. I have it here later, and when I give you the intro to it, it's going to make you laugh. I promise. I promise laughter later, everybody. First guarantee I'll ever make about laughing on the show. All right. Some photographer talk, or photographer, as it's properly said.
That's terrific. Wonderful. You look great. You look like $1 million. You got a day later on tonight? Give me a smile, huh? Hey, thank you. Come on. Ooh, what style? What content? Oh, what art? Oh, my God. I love this profession. Tony, give me 2 more stops on that back light.
I like that because... It's annoying, but also his camera sounded real stupid to me. Just right? Clunk, 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 clunk.
It's funny because it sounded like a camera.
My dad had a camera, though. It was basically SLRs now. It made the same sound. It had film in it, but it made the same sounds. He wound it with his little thumb thing. It wasn't a big crank.
Wound it with his little thumb.
With his little thumb, like he had a regular thumb.
With his thumb.
His cute little thumb.
Little thumb. Oh.
It's like... Wine. He was like Kristen Wiig's character on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. You know what? I forgot about that.
Judith character. Or whatever her name is.
Yeah.
I use his, I still use one of his lenses. It works on my current SLR, which is crazy.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Brian Ibbett saw Saturday Night Live a couple weeks ago. Who was the host? I don't even remember who the host was.
It wasn't Hutcherson.
No, it was Paul Rudd. It was Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd, that's right, yes.
And he reunited all the Anchorman people at the same time as all the One Direction guys on the same stage.
Mm.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Paul Rudd from Big Hot Wet American Summer or whatever.
The classic film.
That's the one I always think of, where he licks that girl's face or something, or he didn't like her anymore. What was the deal?
Yes.
I don't remember what it was. It's, I don't like you anymore. Whatever it was. All right. Doesn't matter. Here we go. Oh, you already did that. Angry acting. Here's just a taste.
I am upset because these people are using your body and draping it with the carcass of some helpless little field mouse to sell some worthless perfume, which probably smells like sheep dip. Shh. What are you shishing me for? They know it. They made it. They can smell. They know what's in it, and they know what it takes to sell it. Stop.
All right. Sheep dip.
Wait.
Another term that has fallen out of favor.
Totally. Yes.
He sounds like Dustin Hoffman there almost.
Yeah, a little bit. I can see that. Like an old Hoffman movie? Sure.
Yeah, right.
Prototypical example of what we're talking about when we say angry acting. That right
yes.
there.
How many of you in here, so Ibbett and I were talking the other day about Marathon Man, and my only memory of that movie with Dustin Hoffman is he's pinned down in a chair and he's having forcible dental work done without any kind of painkiller. Is there anything else to that movie, or am I crazy? Because it seems to me like that's all the movie was him. It was like a torture porn movie. It was like Hostel. Kind of where he's just in a chair and he's having his teeth drilled out by some crazy old German,
right?
And that's the whole movie for me, right? Is there other stuff going on?
Other stuff.
Okay, so Brian was right, there's other things that happen in Marathon,
and that was, and that's just based on the fact that I've seen that clip and haven't seen any of the rest of that movie. I knew that had to be a small part of a much bigger
I think that just says how big of an impact that movie had on my psyche, because it made me hate dentistry so freaking much. But I can't even. I think about it whenever I go to the dentist.
Well, I mean, right. And later on, he brought all the presents back to all the kids in Whoville. So I mean, there's a lot going on in that movie.
We haven't watched any John Schlesinger films, have we?
No, we should.
On film side. I was just,
we have let John Carpenter run this part of town for too long.
Right.
It is all just
interesting. John Carpenter's like, movies. Oh, let's do it for Film Sack.
Yeah.
Like, I don't particularly want to watch Midnight Cowboy or Sunday Bloody Sunday, but like, it seems weird.
The Believers would be good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I could see that.
By the way, I'm looking at mostsacked.com, which is awesome and continues to be rad. David Knighton, by the way, is the creator of that, and we love it. He's just great. He's already got a post up for Chud, which he'll put some more info on here. But right now we have a tie for top director with five films each, John Carpenter and Richard Donner, of all people.
Yeah, not of all people. No, it could only have been those two. Trust me.
It can only be them.
This is not a random selection.
No.
The only, looking at the list here, the only ones that are streaming that I think would be good for us, maybe The Falcon and the Snowman.
Hmm.
Oh, interesting.
I'd watch that. I don't even know what it is. It sounds great.
And maybe The Innocent, although, yeah, I don't know.
The Falcon and the Snowman?
Yeah, that was the one with Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton.
I have no memory of that.
Wang Chung did the themes. Oh, no, that was To Live and Die in L.A. There was David Bowie did the theme song.
Who's this The Falcon?
Oh, God,
the
I don't
Falcon
know. I don't
and
know
the which Snowman. One
which. Sounds like a new Marvel team up.
It does.
I think Timothy Hutton was the Falcon.
Okay.
And I think Sean Penn was the Snowman.
And then who, yeah. Okay. I'd watch that. That sounds great.
Oh, Pacific Heights would be great, but that's not streaming. I mean, basically that's landlord tortures a new couple who moved into the apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Matthew Modine, Melanie Griffith, and Batman. What's his face?
I hope it's not the actor. I would really mean Batman.
The 80s Batman.
Right. Damn it.
Val Kilmer?
Michael Keaton.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
All right. By the way, Peter Jason still holding strong at first place with 7 total appearances. Schwarzenegger shortly behind him with 6. David Patrick Kelly and Arnold Schwarzenegger fighting it out for second place.
Nice.
Anyway, I love this site. If you guys aren't looking at mostsacked.com, then you're doing yourself a severe disservice. It's totally worth looking at. Okay, Daniel. But
don't waste any time with leastsacked.com.
No, that's the worst one. I wonder who the least. Man. Well, we know who the least are, right?
Yeah,
I guess
yeah.
We do.
Just a page dedicated to Minority Report.
Right. Yeah.
I still think we should watch that for the show, just because of Dunaway's hatred of it.
I think if we watch that, then we have to watch Marathon Man.
Okay.
Right.
I'll watch Marathon Man. I need those are good for me because then I get the stigma out, you know, because when you're a kid, all that stuff's worse.
You attach it to, yeah.
Yeah, and I make it worse. It's like that one I was telling you about.
We watched Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah,
so
we did.
That's mine. That was the movie I walked out of in the theater. So
if we made you do that.
I've already done that. Now it's your turn.
Oh, don't tell me. I don't want to watch A Fine Mess ever again.
I'll tell you, the film, if we're going to make a list for each of, like, one film for each of us that we need to watch so that we can finally say we're over it, for me, it needs to be David Lynch's Eraserhead.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Okay.
And it's funny because I know it's not what I think it is, but because I was a kid when it came out, I thought it was this horrible horror movie where that sort of image you have of this guy with puffy hair, that he was some horror, like serial murderer, you know? Yeah. And I was all afraid of him.
Well, you were a kid.
Yeah.
I guess that's the point. Okay. So I'll do, Brian's already eaten his bullet. I'll do Marathon Man. You do that one. Dunaway, what's your least, what is it? Minority Report?
Minority Report? Yes, that's up there. I think that would be phenomenal. That would be.
I do too. Yeah. That'd be a lot of fun. Okay. Well, we'll figure out when and how and all that. But before all that, Daniel Stern does his thing.
It's a regular labyrinth of tunnels and caves. That's where these people live. 10, 12 of my regulars, they come up here for soup every day. Those are the people that disappeared.
Reverend
and
Stern.
That was the favorite memory I ever had of my dad.
So there was actually a trope subverted in the middle of this film. Oh. I thought this movie was going to portray homeless people as dirty and gross and stupid and all this. And it actually showed us a few, not all of them, but some of them were actually just sort of normal.
Yeah, they were all right. The lady he went down there with seemed to have her head on her shoulder. She was a little greased up and gross, but she...
The one that he pulled out of jail? Yeah.
Yeah, she was all right.
Like, at first, I'm just like, oh, homeless people are so dirty. Mm. They're portraying them as, like, always, like pigs or something, right?
Yeah, that's a typical thing for them to do, and they didn't do it. So props to them.
for not taking the easy road.
I like this line here.
Now listen, pal.
Dad!
I like that.
Listen, pal.
Now listen, pal.
Dad!
That guy looked like Justin Robert Young to me.
Oh, wow.
The guy with the knife. He was great. Right, yeah, right. Homeless guy that said the sky is getting shut or whatever.
You mean the guy who I thought was just waiting for that knife to snap and stab in the arm with it?
He looked like Jerry to me for some reason. Kind of ambiguous ethnic background and all that. This was a little too nonchalant.
What ugly f***ers.
There's something about that line. I like it. All right. Scott Johnson presents Film Sacks. Worst Star Trek cast and crew of all time. Ready? Just listen to these names. Here you go. The worst crew to ever helm a ship called the Enterprise.
Here you go. Gentlemen, may I present Mr. Wilson of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Chief O'Brien, Captain Bosch, and AJ.
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 That last bit.
AJ's going to die.
I'm wearing a red shirt, aren't I?
but even like Captain Bosch sounds like a...
Right.
And then Chief O'Brien.
Chief O'Brien.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think you guys like that. Awesome. All right. Nobody ever believes Bosch.
And I believe that these murders are somehow connected to the probe that's going on underneath the streets of this city at this very moment. Nonsense, Bosch.
Bosch. Did you hear him flub his line there? Listen to that again.
It's going on underneath the streets of this...
Underneath.
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 Keep rolling.
Keep rolling. We're almost out of
Burn
film, guys.
Daylight here.
Turn the other cheek, director said. All right, here's another one. This is something about semen. I don't remember what this is about. Here it is, though.
You may not know, but there's NRC men crawling all over this goddamn city.
Oh, something about semen.
Cement.
Oh, cement.
Under our cement. Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't.
You may not know, but there's NRC men crawling all over this goddamn.
It sounds like I don't know, Brian.
NRC men. And is there something National Regulatory Council?
Something
like that? NRC men?
NRC men? Oh, NRC men.
NRC men.
Oh, right.
Say one more time.
All right. NRC. Hold on. You don't mean me. You mean the file. I had to add Randy back. We lost him somewhere. Okay, here you go.
You may not know, but there's NRC men crawling all over this goddamn city.
Yeah, NRC.
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 They're the ones actually who are moving the toxic crap.
Yeah, not rated semen is what that stands for.
The NRC men.
Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Got it. Okay. You're exactly right. Are you hearing that pop? I hear that pop sound.
Yeah, that's on Randy's microphone.
Is that Randy's again? Oh, it's like the
Randy!
One time. It's all right. You got the popping fresh or whatever is happening there. let's see. This is my other. I like this line a lot.
Now, there's no cause to be insolent here. Eat it. Eat it.
Wow.
That's great.
There's no cause to be insolent here. Eat it.
I just love how quick and off the cuff. All right.
That's the worst thing you can come up with as a retort, too.
It's pretty good.
Right. Eat it.
How about scream? Oh, this is good.
Well, go ahead. Go scream your fool head off.
That guy's great. I've seen him in other stuff. What do we know Wilson from? Many things. Let's see. Not Chief O'Brien. Not Ossifer Crespi. Where is it? Francine? Nope, can't find it. Anyway, that guy, he died in a couple of years ago, but he is in lots of movies. And
like he was in The Professional, Dead Poets Society, Awakenings, The Quiz Show.
Yep.
Well, Awakenings, I forgot about him being in that.
Yeah, remember that? Was he one of the dudes that was being awakened?
Learn.
He might have been.
Learn.
I like that movie. It's got Marge Simpson in it.
It does.
A few things you ever see her in that isn't Marge. Okay, let's see. Well, there's that. What else are we doing here? Let's play one more or two more or a few more clips. Here's this Bosch being in. Oh, this voiceover was real bad. Here's this.
Long hair, carrying a paper bag. He just left. Follow him. High priority.
Gee, I wonder if they did that in post.
That's a great voice, though.
Right?
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm suddenly like, whoa, Stacy Keach out of nowhere, and he's doing a voiceover.
Yeah, it's really bad. And it was strange because it just didn't sound like he was there when he was doing it. I always like those. Yeah. All right, Bosch is a fool again.
You're an idiot, Bosch. You know that?
You're an idiot, Bosch. Take that, Bosch.
I know that, Bosch.
Here's where we
Bet
say
you didn't know.
Here's where we say the name of the film.
Chud. What? C-H-U-D. Let me see
the chart. Let me see it. No, I'll stop it.
I don't believe you when you say Chud. Let me have a look at that. All right, here's more of it.
Cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller. A Chud. All right.
Okay.
All right.
It's a Chud. There, I admitted it. Now gas the whole thing.
I'm just so happy again. I know I said this last week, but like the number of times that word and phrase was raised on Extra Life Radio, it just makes me giddy that we're finally seeing
this. It makes me a little sad though, because it's not nearly, it doesn't hold up to the scrutiny.
No, nothing. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it would be hard for anything to live up to the hype of just the buildup of Chud, mm-hmm. but this, wow, this missed it by a mile.
Yeah.
I'm glad we didn't hold it for like episode 200 or a live film mm-hmm. second or Tacular, because wow,
yeah.
that's bad.
That would, yeah, ooh. Yeah, we would have had to, oh, that would have been some penance ooh. For that. A live one of that? Oh, no way. Yeah. All right, some sweet acting. Here's my favorite. If this doesn't win Razzie or something, then something's wrong with the world. Here it is.
Wilson's toying with the idea of flooding the sewers with gas.
What? That guy is a madman.
He is a madman. Gas could drive those things up here.
That guy's a madman.
Madman.
So bad.
It's one of those things where you're like, why didn't the director get another take? Yeah. Why not just ask him to say all that again, only different?
Yeah, what was their dealio? All right.
Do it again, but faster and more intense.
just different. However, anyway, you can do it differently.
All right. So here's the one I was saving for you. Tell me this music in the movie at this very intense moment doesn't sound like the Hanna-Barbera character. I think he was a hyena, but yeah. he would laugh like a hyena.
Come on.
Snagglepuss.
Yes, yeah, something like that. So I'll play it and it'll immediately ring true. Right. Okay, so here you go.
Doesn't it sound like
Snagglepuss?
See?
Yeah. It's at stage left, even.
That's yes. the guy.
Well, not Snagglepuss. Snagglepuss was the pink lion.
Pink lion. Exactly. The co-host for the Laugh Olympics.
Yeah, no, it was the dog. It was the dog
was that Dastardly.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Muttley?
Was Muttley. It? Or was it Muttley. The? It was
Muttley.
It wasn't right. Speed Buggy, right?
No.
He was. Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, it was Muttley.
What a bunch! Why would we have such shitty cartoons when we were kids? Why was that stuff so bad?
But let's no. William Hanna and Joseph Barbera made shitty cartoons when we were kids, and they started out doing just fine, but then for some reason they decided to make cartoons for another 30 years and they were all bad.
And they cut the budget in like 4/5 and spent a fifth of it.
I'm so sorry. If you're a young person, you're like, oh, I want to watch the golden age of cartoons. You're going to run into 80% Hanna-Barbera crap.
Yeah. The 80s and 90s, early 90s Hanna-Barbera is really an embarrassment.
It really was just recycled. Like, I mean, basically they'd come up with one episode for Scooby-Doo and then basically just replace it with the Speed Buggy.
Yeah.
And just make a whole.
Yep.
It's like
your Scooby snack.
It's like a more like mainstream legitimized filmation quality is what it
right.
is.
Yeah.
It was never good. But back when the Hanna-Barbera guys were doing like the Tom and Jerry cartoons and that stuff.
Oh, sure.
Amazing.
They started out great. Flintstones, Yogi Bear, Top Cat, Jetsons, Johnny Quest, they were on a freaking roll and they should have just stopped.
Yeah.
But instead, we end up, you know, just driving to the bottom until we get to freaking Grape Ape.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh.
I don't know about Johnny Quest though. Johnny Quest is iffy. That one that one had some problems. What was the name of the little Indian dude?
Haji.
Haji, that was it. What was the dog's name? Bandit?
Bandit, yep.
Okay, and Race Banyan was the
Yep.
Okay. It's all better as
recall the stuff. Yeah.
What's the new one called? What's the one where they make direct fun of that?
Adventure Brothers. Right?
Yeah. Or Venture Brothers. That's it.
Venture Brothers.
The Venture Brothers is a way better Johnny Quest. Trust me on this one. If you haven't seen it,
I have not seen it, but a lot of people say that it's really, really.
I mean,
good.
It's super hardcore parody, but it's very funny and really well done. And freaking what's his name? The guy that plays the Race Banyan character type. I can't remember his name. You take a bite out of the Denver. What's his name?
Patrick Warburton.
Patrick Warburton plays that guy, right. And he is fantastic.
Right. I play poker against him in that PS4 game, or PS3 game, Poker Night, where you've got GLaDOS dealing cards.
Oh,
and,
right. Oh, yeah, he's in that.
Ash, right.
I can't think of his character name. That's all right. All right.
Hanna-Barbera. Oh. They're responsible for all the worst stuff in the 80s.
You're
They're
not wrong.
They made Snorks. They made Pound Puppies. Mm-hmm. They
introduced Scrappy Doo.
Probably.
For sure.
they were solely responsible. I realized that it was somebody else's property, but they were solely responsible for inflicting the Smurfs on us.
Yeah, they did. But like in the case of Scooby-Doo, I don't think was ever that good, but at least it had, there was a purity to it in the early years, and then they put Scrappy Dumb in there and then brought or whatever,
who's
Scooby Dumb.
Yeah, who's Scrappy his slow cousin?
That was Scooby Dumb.
Scooby Dumb.
Which is so dumb. And then Scrappy Doo was the smart talking little bastard one that came in later. And that's the worst. Yeah, it was the Pesci. It was like that in those movies.
Lethal Weapon movies.
You know, those movies with people in them.
Yeah. They took a fine kids comic and Richie Rich and turned it into this horrible Saturday morning cartoon that went on for years.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, I forgot about that, too.
Did you do the Casper stuff? Or was that somebody else?
Yes, yes.
They had some Casper going on, right?
Yes, they did. They had a Popeye and Son.
Shut up. I forgot about that. That was an abomination.
Seriously. I mean, Hanna-Barbera, if they had been run out of town in like 1975, everything would have been fine.
It would have been all right. Filmation could have taken all this heat. Instead, they were always second fiddle. All right. The death of The death of John Goodman, everyone. Sit back and use. I assume that was him, since that's he was funny. The loudest one in there.
Oh, no, I'm dying here.
What's going on? Roseanne! All right. No one believes Bosch, and that's it for clips. So let's move on to what we like to call the checklist. Today's film check checklist, dude named Bosch, check. Don't show your creature for nearly entire movie, check. And finally, Daniel Stern's hair the way it was meant to be, check.
Yeah, boy, did he look like he stunk.
Ooh, I got that feeling too. People always make fun of the fact that I can tell people's breath by the way they look on camera. I can totally get.
Yeah.
There was some like old bread, like just a stanky dude,
like,
man.
Like a B.O., big B.O.
Yeah,
issue.
Big B.O. Yeah. And the kind of BO that you're embarrassed to even say anything about. It's so bad, it goes beyond description. You can't even say anything. Ivar Broger, Trek stuff, Trek connections, was the Goonie NRC man. He played, Dr. Orem in the episode Unity. Episode of Natural Law on Voyager. For some reason, Daryl missed the main dude in here. Christopher Curry, he was also in Voyager, and we didn't get that for some reason. I don't know why. Ed French, additional special makeup artist, effects artist. He did a bunch of stuff for both things as the same credit. So additional special makeup effects artist is his credit for all things he does. And then Doug Drexler, special makeup crew for Chud. He did work for TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, and did all that crap for them as well. He also recently he was part of that group that bought and restored that original TOS shuttlecraft. Remember that whole thing that was in the news? Yeah.
Yeah, really? He was...
He was one of those guys. So
that's cool.
Good job, Doug Drexler. The soundtrack grade I'd give it is shit. It is shit. It is really bad. And sounds like a laughing cartoon. Guys, time for the Twitter post roundup.
All right.
That's where you guys round this thing up or sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start this time, like we always do, with Randy.
Chud. A boring romp through a fright-free landscape that could be used to torture people in Guantanamo, which would itself make a way better movie. Write that down.
Nice. Brian, you say this dog was called Muttley?
Muttley, yeah.
Okay, there he is.
M-U-T-T-L-E-Y.
That's the one. Worst thing ever. Oh, you're doing it. It's bad. Brian Dunaway, you're next. And did we lose Brian?
Brian Dunaway. You're on deck.
Brian Dunaway? Maybe he is literally on deck. He's taking it.
Explains so much.
Hold on. I can't look at his avatar without wanting to laugh.
Yeah.
All right.
His avatar is in Skype is Brian kind of pointing right at you with his tongue out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've ever had us. Right. Okay, we're back and Brian's back. Brian, it's your turn to sum this thing up in 140 characters or less. Go Dunaway.
I'm going to do it. Chud, I can't be held responsible for everything that shows up in the sewer. Wink, wink, nod, nod. This movie was fantastic.
All right. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Chud, I thought it was a long 30 minutes until we see see the monsters the first time, but that was nothing compared to how long the last hour felt.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
You know what? An hour 30 makes me happy when we see a film sack movie of dubious report. So we'll see it and I'll go, oh, that's good. It's only an hour and a half. It's not 2 hours. This movie, that was still...
Yeah, still felt too long. Yeah.
That was really bad. All right. This just in, just handed to me. Alternate title, we get to choose either Never Eat a Dirty Dime You Picked Out of a New York Phone Booth Coin Return or Cannibalistic Home Alone Underground Dwellers. Those are your choices.
Okay, all right.
Put the H in Chad there. All right, so here we go. Emails, got a couple of these real quick. Says, hey guys, from Kevin Scott, who says, man with two first names, says, I love the show. Could you guys do a show about the 1984 film? Here we are back in 84. Streets of Fire. For the most part, it's overlooked, except for some brief exposure for the song "I Can Dream About You." Brian, hum a few bars.
I can dream about you. Ooh. If I can't hold you tonight,
that's the one. It's even better with all that popping. It's amazing.
Right? It sounds like he's.
It sounds like he's in Kandahar.
Like auto tune.
Great.
Making me really sad.
It's all right. We got you. Great film with barely legal Diane Lane and a creepy young Willem Dafoe. Is he creepy? You could have left out because we already know that about that
guy.
Yeah,
it's perennially creepy.
And one of the most underutilized tough guy actors ever, Eddie and the Cruisers Pair. So it's Michael Pair. I don't know who that is.
Paré. It's Paré.
Is it Paré? Oh, now I know who it is. Just kidding. I still don't.
Yeah, you do.
Yours,
you
do. Just kidding. I probably do if I saw him. Yours truly is Kevin Scott. Super Duck Shock, or Super Duper, I can't read today. Super Duper Shock Cinema at superdupershockcinema.com. There's your plug there, Kevin. We got one, and we'll, if that's something we could see, sure, why not?
What did you see? We saw Michael Paré in something. Philadelphia Experiment. Oh, no, he was in the, he was in the original, and then he was also in the remake.
Oh, he's the main dude then.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Always get okay. Philadelphia. Whenever I hear the word.
We saw both of the Philadelphia Experiments. The other one called, what was it? Midnight.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Lovers. I don't know. I have no idea.
Right. Yeah.
That's the one. Midnight Lovers.
Rick, till the internet.
Rex Fisher wrote in, how dare you guys impugn the airtight, cynical logic of Terminator 2 Judgment Day? As far as a few questions you gents had, quote, one, yes, the Arnold Terminator does have a penis. In the first film, when once again our hero is walking naked, approaching a spiky-haired Bill Paxton, his manhood is plainly seen swaying to and fro betwixt his loins. So we got to see his unit in that movie. I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember that either.
Number two, when you boys ask why they can't travel back in time in clothes, are you forgetting that, again, in the first film, Kyle Reese clearly addressed the issue when speaking to Dr. Silberman at the police station? Dr. Silberman says, why didn't you bring any weapons? Something more advanced. Don't you have ray guns? Show me a piece of future technology. To which Kyle Reese says, you go naked. Something about a field generating, about the field generated by a living organism. Right. Nothing dead will go. Dr. Silberman says, why? Kyle Reese says, I didn't build the effing thing.
Yeah.
Silberman says, okay, but the cyborg.
Design flaw.
He says, if it's metal, and then interrupted by Kyle Reese, who says, surrounded by living tissue. So he really gave him a what for. So I guess these were explained. Hope this helps, he says. Keep up the great work and try to work in another Charlton Heston movie. I miss your Heston impressions. Thanks, Rex. Mm. Has been a while, right?
Mm-hmm. Has been a while. Yeah.
Maybe that vampire, what was the deal with that? The I Am Legends, that whole book is based on.
Oh, yeah, Omega Man.
Omega Man. I think that's the last Heston we had. So it's been a long time, folks. Well, name when. I'll believe
it. I know it's sad.
Oh, you mean you're sad?
Yeah, it wasn't.
Like calling Brian out. All right, fine. Name another film.
Fine, do it. Name that tune.
Throw down. If you're so sure. Next film. We're doing a Star Trek commentary track for season 3, episode 1, called Brian. Randy's at Evolution? Did we lose Randy?
Evolution.
I've lost Randy.
He has us on mute or something.
It is Evolution. Yeah.
Evolution.
I think Skype has been just dropping us randomly.
Not kind to, well, definitely not kind to either of you today. Although in your case, I don't know what happened there. That was different than this. But either way, Star Trek live commentary track.
Season 3, episode 1 of Next Generation.
Yep. Available now on Netflix and wherever Star Trek DVDs are sold. So join us for that. We get a lot of requests to keep doing those. So this is by popular demand. Watch for that next week right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, you can go to our website, filmsack.com. That's a website. It's a place to go. Things to do. Check it out. Archives are there. Links to everything are there. Please go there. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter @FilmSack. and leave us a review on iTunes. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for the intermittently disconnected Randy. We'll see you next time.
Perfect.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.